But really, you stop me anytime you want to. Let's talk about what you want to know about radio. And I'm glad to give you any expertise that I have. I know, you know, some of the things, and as I said, and some of the pitfalls and some of the things that you're going to find that you're going to have to do. You guys are probably going to have it tougher than anybody getting into this business. You know, if you notice in the paper, man, there are want ads that just go from forever. I know, being in the restaurant business too, that I don't do the business part of it. I'm the food guy there because I'm a barbecue freak. But my wife calls it a misguided passion. Until I opened a restaurant, then that was okay, because she didn't have to cook anymore. But I noticed in the paper, you see all the people are dying to get people to come to work for them. I went through a Wendy's last night. I get a to-go order, and with it, I get a job application. I'm thinking, crap, they've seen my ratings lately or something? What is it? So that it's kind of scary, you know, when you look at people looking for jobs. Yet in this business, think about it. I mean, how tough is it to break into this? So you have picked a field to go into that it seems that everybody wants to go into. So you have to remember, I think, one thing is you have to persevere. Of course, you've been told that, but you got to really want to do it. You've got to, you have to, you know, get down and get dirty. If you have to drive 50 miles to get into a radio station and get there like on a Sunday morning and play the tapes to get in, you better do it. Or TV's the same way. TV's even worse right now as far as trying to get into. But my daughter's in that. She produces. She went to NKU, produces a show on Channel 9, and is in it called the Inquirer Prep Sports Show at 11:30 on Sundays. And she works like a 70-hour week and gets paid not nearly what you would think, you know, somebody in that position would get paid. But they got her because she was young, intelligent, and could do the job. So my advice to her was, hey, you got to get in. You got to establish yourself. And once you do that, once you get in, you have to remember, never, ever quit the job because something didn't go right, because you think you're better than the job is. What you have to do is, if you think that's great. Go for it. Go find that other job. But make sure you don't quit this one first. And when the boss looks at you and says, you love it here, you go, ah, this is the best place I've ever been. In the meantime, you got tapes going out, you know? But you got to do that anyway, because that's what it's about. What it's about is you moving up, you know? But to move up, you can't give up what you have. Grasp it, hold it, and then when you're ready to let it go, that's when you let it go. Do it on your terms. But the secret, the first thing you have to do is get in. And you notice nobody guarantees you to get in. When I got into radio in 1965 or 64, it was an easy thing. It was a guarantee. You had a job. They were looking for people. It was like the restaurant industry now, man. You know, I went to a school like this. That's why I kind of have an affinity for you guys. I know what you're doing. And I was out of school in the eighth grade. I went on and did some more after that. But I got into radio, and getting into radio, to me, was very easy. Right now, you guys have got to face this deregulation and the fact that one group owns, you know, 5 or 10 stations, and now they're doing it in small markets. I talked to a very good friend of mine, Bob Moody, who's a consultant, and he was saying about how he does country. He said, but it's happening in every format. He was talking about how they take 5 stations, they take the afternoon guy, does the afternoon show on one, he tapes middays and maybe another shift. In the meantime, the morning guy is doing the very same thing. These guys are cutting their costs. One person is doing 3 and 4 shifts, maybe even 5, on 5 stations. So what does that equate to you guys? How the hell do I get into this? Because it's, you know, and this is the small markets. It never happened in the small markets before. It was always pretty easy, in fact. You know, you just walk. I was in radio. I should not have lasted very long. I was a musician. And I was with a group. We had a national hit, and we were doing real well. But I kind of knew that I wanted to do something maybe just a little more secure than music. And so I was with a blues group. an instrumental kind of jazz blues group, and I realized that, you know, there's not a big future in that, so a little more, I think a little more security was radio. And I still got to keep my hands in music a little bit, too. I went from Memphis, Tennessee to Lake Providence, Louisiana, KLPL, and it's a little small station, and second day I was on the air, I worked on musician time, so that meant I went to sleep about 6 in the morning, you know, and I won't tell you what we did all night, but I went to work one day, the second day, and about 6:15, I put on a record, and it was an Andy Williams record. Probably nobody knows who Andy Williams is. Oh, somebody does, okay. I've forgotten, tell me. So I put on an Andy Williams record. I told this to last year's group. And, we had records. We queue up the record. We had guys that could tell you. We used to have contests. You put a record on, and you go, root, root. And somebody could tell you who wrote the song, who produced the song, the whole number. You know? Yeah, we were into that. So I go, put the record on, get ready for it, right? And so I have a spot set playing, and I come out, and I hit the jingle, you know, KLPL, you know, blah, 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 boom, hit the record. And here's Andy Williams. And the record takes, and so I'm sitting there. I got my next spots lined up, right? And boom, I go to sleep. And I was sleeping for about 45 minutes. Second day ever in radio, I'm asleep for 45 minutes. And I wake up. I look over, and the record's going, shk, shk, shk. It's on the air. I look, good God, what am I going to do? I throw the mic on and say, that was Andy Williams. And I went on, and nobody said anything, you know? I said, there's nobody listening. I can do any damn thing I want to do on this radio station. And that's when I realized I could do voices, I could do strange concepts, and nobody would really get that upset with me as long as I cleaned up the control room when I was done, you know? But I was very lucky that I got into a situation like that. And you have, if you want to branch out, a lot of you guys might want to be, how many people going into radio? Okay, good. So a lot of you thinking about going into radio, you might want to be jocks, you know, and go in and go into programming and be on the air. How many, I guess everybody's thinking about on the air. That's the best thing, going on the air first, you know, because yeah, I doubt if you get a programming job before that, unless you end up being some program director's evil minion. And none of you want that, because those guys don't get paid and they get whipped a lot. And they're bad, you know, it's a bad job. But yet, I think the best thing I could say to you is when you get in, you know, as I said before, and when, I said when, assuming you will get in, because a lot of you guys won't. I mean, now maybe I won't say a lot of you. All of you might, if you're humble, man. If you get the first job, and when you get the first job, you're okay. Once you're there, and you've got any talent whatsoever, you're okay. Because you don't quit that job, right? Remember, you don't quit that job. You do look out for other jobs, but you just move up the ladder. And pretty soon, you know, I know guys that are making, you know, millions a year. You know them too. I mean, you've heard of them. But there are people. I know, I tell you about that first station I went to. It was a guy named Lanny James, his real name. And he was in Lake Providence when I went there, and he stayed there. He stayed there his whole career. And he lived very well. He had a nice home. His kids went to school, went to college, the whole thing. He had a real nice life. And it's about lifestyle. You can take the first job. You can go to, I got to be in New York. I've got to work. I got to take Howard Stern's place. Okay, then you can do that. But you have to remember that, like, it's a tough climb to get there, and you can do it. I mean, a lot of us have, you know, gotten into positions to where you're making big bucks, and it's really, you know, it's not really that hard to do it once you get into it. You're facing the toughest time right now, and I don't mean to scare you, but I want to wake you up. You know, this is the toughest time getting into it, because once you get into it, that's when you start having fun. Because you're going to like what you're doing, man. You're sitting there with your music director, and I mean, everybody likes music. I mean, suddenly you're going through songs and you're making this song a hit. You suddenly have something to do with what's happening in the industry, and you feed off that. It becomes you, man. I mean, you become, you know, you're radio then, and if you are intense in radio, which you probably will be, then it's fun because you finally got into a profession that's good. You're not going to work every day counting up a column of numbers. Because, you know, I assume since you're here, you're probably not into that. I mean, you want to be into radio. And when your program director tells you to do something, as stupid as it may be, because I'm convinced there's some kind of moron school that they go to before they become program directors. Many of them. But you have to do what the moron says to do. And if you don't like the moron, you leave. But you don't tell the moron you're leaving. You get the job, and then you tell him what a great gig it's been, and you know how wonderful he is, but you're moving on. You feel you have something better in the horizon, because you never know, if he's a big enough moron, he's going to move up. That's how they work. That's how it works. Because he looked good at a party, holding a glass of, you know, a drink. He wore just the right suit, you know. And some owner goes, hey, that's my guy. In the meantime, the guy that works his ass off. But that's okay. You can work your ass off. And you can get in a position, that myself, a lot of people are in that position to where, it took me a long time to get there, but you get into a position where when that program director hires you, you know, he doesn't tell you what to do, you know, because he hired you for what you do. And he knows that when he hires you, you're going to be intense. And you guys work with me. Are we intense?
Very.
You know, I mean, but we're having a good time. We're laughing, screaming, and yelling and stuff like that. But it's all intense. We do comedy, in case you don't know what our show is. I do satire. And it's not a regular talk show. We do the entertaining ourselves. Hell, when I started doing that, I was like you guys. I didn't know about, you know, I didn't know that I could entertain. I knew I was a drummer. And I knew I could play some guitar and stuff like that, you know. But I had never stood in front of a band and sung. You know, even when I sung, I stayed behind, you know. So I never realized that I could get out in front and be the man. And so I developed that over the time. Because, remember, nobody was listening to that first station, you know. Maybe you'll get lucky in getting that, you know. It doesn't sound like a lucky situation to be in a situation where nobody's listening. I have become a bit over... After 30 years of broadcasting, I've become a little bit of a dinosaur. I'm not a total dinosaur because I still have people that work with me. On my staff, there are people that are 25. Like Duke is 25. Rob's, you know, maybe not even 30. We have somebody new, you know, Leah. The rest of them, they're all, you know, pretty young people. And to keep up with them, and they keep me aware of what's happening, you know, now. And we do a lot of topical things. There's a big difference in my show and Bob and Tom's show. Bob and Griswold, Tom Griswold's a real good friend of mine, and I like him a lot, and I think they do some really good things. But they have it a little easier than we have it, because they go for the genitalia thing. Hey, man, when there's no news, I'm thinking, damn, what are we going to parody? We get a little risque. But we conceptually get risque usually, so what we do is political satire. We do social satire, I probably should say, because we try to reach out and get, you know, more things than just politics, because you have to get enough material. I cannot rely on, when the satire is up, I'm driving to work and I hear Tom going off on 20 minutes of dick jokes, and I'm thinking, man, you know. That's just that one subject. By the time I got to work, they had a guy on. They were talking about scrotum. So I thought, that's pretty well-rounded. You know, they're doing a lot more than that. You know, so but I listened to it with envy to a degree, thinking, man, you know, I'd like to do that, but I can't rely on that. You know, so that, in a way, what Howard Stern does is really pretty easy, because you can always be outrageous. You know, and so what we do is a little more difficult, I think. And maybe a lot more difficult, actually. But if you tie into the right people, you work with the right people, it works out okay. You know? And when I said I'm kind of a dinosaur, because we're one of the last left doing this kind of humor. There aren't many people left. Brandon Meyer, I think, is one in Chicago. Let's see. Not many. I mean, most of it now has taken... A lot of people will say the cheap way out. When you make that kind of money that these guys make, I don't think you can say it's a cheap way out. You know, it's. I have a situation where, like, okay, I've got a daughter. I can't see us sitting around a table Thanksgiving and her saying, "Dad, when you were on the air talking about the size of your penis, I just, like, you know, that would bother me, you know, but it doesn't bother Tom." And I say, that's fine. And I'm not going to be one to censor anybody. I certainly didn't want to be censored when now or ever in my career. I wanted it to be up to myself. And you have to censor yourself. I mean, if you're on, let's say, a station like EBN, you can say a lot more than you can say if you're on WGRR. If you're on the country station, you know, don't use double syllables. I'm only kidding. I'm just not a big Boot Scooter fan. How about some questions? You guys, you must have something you want to know about the business that I can help you with. That, you know, like, who's going to ask me, you know, why don't you hire me right off? Pay me five mil a year or something. Anybody got any questions? Okay, $5 mil. Geez, I may have overstated myself here. You know? Yeah, go ahead.
Two questions. First, how's Mom and M?
Mom and M, fine, thank you.
All right. Do you think that that's part of what kind of knocked you out of the major syndication? The fact that you didn't get that type of humor?
No, I don't think so. No, we were doing fine actually. I'll explain that. We were syndicated in 70 markets. We had a really nice syndication situation going. In the meantime, WLW's ratings, not just mine, were taking a tumble. And so they came to me and they said, well, you know, we really need you to go back local again. And but I said, you know, but we're doing very well with this. I was supposed to, even had signed up, everything was going. They had paid the first month's rent on the office. We had to pay for the office space. Universal Studios in Orlando was going to have me come down and do our show from there. It was, boy, what a sweet setup. I mean, it was just perfect. And then they start whining at LW about what it was. To be perfectly honest with you, at LW, it was management. We had possibly the worst program director I had ever seen in my life at that point. Not because he was a bad guy, he was a fine guy. But he didn't do what should have been done with the radio station. He we'll talk programming here. Okay, what happened was, you know Willie, right? Mm-hmm. I love Willie. I think Willie's great on the air. But you don't make Willie has a very high negative rating, whereas, let's say, Mike McConnell does not. So Willie became omnipresent on WLW, which is fine for, because he has a decent number, right? But what happens when you do that, when you put a guy in a situation like that, in the old days, it would have the analogy would have been like putting Wolfman Jack on at 9 o'clock in the morning, yeah, when he's supposed to be on at night. You know, he stirs it up and he does a great job. But Willie demands attention. He's that kind of person. When he walks into a room, me, you know, and that's cool. I think you got to be like that, and don't think you can't. I mean, not everybody does, but, you know, that's his personality. Well, the program director was kind of like, you know, he had his head up his ass. He wasn't thinking about it. He didn't care, you know. He just wanted to get his gig done and go home that day or something. I have no idea why it happened that way. And I'm not naming any names. And also the management. So Willie basically, the guys in the production room, they were more attuned to that person who is 28 years old, a lot of your ages, and listening to WLW. Well, how many people here are 25 to 30? Okay, 25 to 30. How much do you think you have in common with somebody 50? You don't really think you have a whole lot, do you? Well, do you know that Arbitron puts you and me in the same category? They put us, it's 25 to 54 is the group they're looking for. So we're trying to go for that same audience. So getting back to the Willie thing, Willie was appealing to the 28-year-old, and they made the station appeal to the 28-year-old. And by simply, I walked in that production room one time. I pulled my wallet out and I said, "What does it cost to buy a promo on this damn station?" I was pissed, you know, because I had not heard one from me or the morning drive show. In the summertime, when Willie wouldn't be on the air for like a week, because we had baseball games on. During the baseball game, instead of, what do you promote at night? You promote mornings. Because mornings is when they're going to be waking up and they want to hear what's happening on the radio. Well, you'd hear Willie promos. Well, he wasn't going to be on for a week. Well, it was because the production director found it easy to make Willie promos. Willie bought him tapes and stuff like that. But you can't do what's convenient. And they did what was convenient. And therefore, their ratings started slipping. Now, getting back to my situation, so I'm caught up in this, right? I work for WLW. Randy and I, Michaels and I, are very good friends. And, you know, we've been together for a long time. And suddenly, I'm faced with a real dilemma of where the company says, okay, if you want to go to Universal, man, it's okay. You've earned it. Go down there. They want you. And we'll back you up. We don't want you to. We want you to stay here. And I'm thinking about that. And I'm thinking, do I tell someone like Leah, who is very, you know, she wants to make sure she's secure, that we're going to move down there, pack up, and go down there if they're going to give me a year? Because with me, it's okay. But with everybody else, is it really okay? Do I want to make everybody pack up and go down there for that? I'm thinking, yeah, screw them. But then I got, you know, they're my friends too. And we all talked about it. And everybody but me was perfectly willing to do the local thing. But I had done that. And so I went to them with an alternative, which was, I'll tell you what, since I'm, you know, 56 years old, and I'm thinking, hey, man, I want to do something to kind of slide a little bit. I've been doing this a long time. And the guys at the station seem to forget when they were in radio school, you know, I was at the Big 8, you know, doing morning drive at CK, you know, and which was, you probably don't know, but that was a huge station at the time. And so, I'm ready to kind of take it easy, but I still enjoy what I'm doing. You know, I still like today, I'm going to go to work and I'm going to think of some really, you know, funny things, and we're going to do it and it's going to be fun. We're going to laugh. It's going to be a party after the preparation's up, you know. And so I'm thinking all that. And so I said, how about a weekend show, a syndicated weekend show, but it has to run on the A stations. Now, let me explain. When you syndicate, you are probably going to, you always will. You'll end up, unless you're Rush Limbaugh or Stern, you'll end up, you notice where Imus is in Cincinnati? He's on the Bob. You know, it's down. You know, you can hardly hear it sometimes. You're going to end up on the smaller station because the big station, normally, they don't need you. You know, if they need you, they'll come to you because they're getting you free just for some commercial time. So, but I said, the weekend show goes on the A stations in the market that J-Core owns. And they said, okay, we'll put it on the A stations. Therefore, for like doing a three-hour show a week, I'll have more listeners for one day than I had on 70 stations doing it, you know, 5 days a week, and I can still be local. And I'm going to build a studio. I have a place in Florida, so I'm going to build a studio down there, and they're going to do that. And I go down there, and while Jaws and Gator are up there working their butts off, counting the snow inches and stuff, I'll be on the air, and I can be talking about how miserable the snow is and how deep it is, and the school closings, and then go to news and go jump in the river and take a little swim and come back, and then talk about how miserable it is. Isn't that awful? But you know, the reality is like that I'd worked into this situation, and it's them that wants to keep me. I kind of like the idea of writing a book about Gilbert Gnarly or something like that. But it's, they have to make it worth, you know, your while. And you can, and everybody in this room can work yourself into that situation. You all have that potential. Because believe me, I bet I didn't have any more potential to do what I'm doing than any one person sitting in this room right now. And but to answer your question on syndication, that's why we, you know, they gave me a really nice deal to stay and be local. If you saw the article in Cincinnati Magazine, all of our affiliates were very upset that we were going to do this. But I really, since the parent company wanted me to do it, I really didn't have, as far as I was concerned, you know, a lot of choice. And at that point, I should have gotten out of them everything I could. I don't want to make this sound like everything, it's you versus management, but it is. You know? But it's got to be a nice war. because many of you will be in management. And then the bottom line is how little they have to pay you. You know, because if he pays you, if you go in there saying, I want $50,000, and he's saying, man, I know I can get him for $35,000. That's $15,000 that goes more to the bottom line, and his bonus is bigger. See my point? It isn't that he doesn't like you or thinks that you don't have the ability. You know, it is a little minor war, and then you know, but you know, you have to do it with a smile. Did you asked me a question? Did I answer it? I took a while there, but I you know, I want to be thorough on it. Yeah.
Can you tell me about the typical day of what you do, you know, to produce your show? What actually happens throughout from 8 a.m. or earlier, you know, until... You know.
Yeah, it's a long day. I get up in the morning, I do some heroin. No. I found after the 60s, drugs don't inspire many funny bits, because you wake up the next morning and you look at your copy and you go, the teletypewriter puked green gum. What is that? You know? So it just doesn't work. I get up in the morning about 7. I get a marker. I'm in the newspaper. I'm going, ah, that's good, that's good, that's good. I can write. And then I might write a piece at that point about, you know, trying to use something like that. And then I go to work at, say, I'm working until about 10. And then I get to work, say, at 10:30. And at that point, I have guys that write for me, or I don't say for me, with me. And I paid them for that, and just, you know, part of the whole deal. And I edit what they do, and then by noon I'm in the production room, and that's where, only for an hour. We've always done this for an hour in the production room. We put together all the material you might hear us do that day. Not all of it, because a lot of it's spontaneous. A lot of it is live, like the Paul Harveys. And I did the Earls live for a long time, but people got upset when I was doing it live because people in the studio were laughing. And a listener called me, and he was right. He said, you know, Earl takes himself seriously. If someone were laughing at him, he'd probably smack him over the head with a beer bottle. That's a good point. And so I started doing it, you know, I can't do it with people laughing in the background, so I started, you know, pre-taping that too. But a lot of the stuff we'll interact with that's pre-taped. And so we do all the taping and voices and some of the music too. Because we also do music, then at 2 o'clock, you guys know this. I'm one of these napping kinds of guys, man. But I found something out, man. You can go lay down. We got a great couch. We got our new studio. I said, I want a couch. Got to have a couch, man. So at 2 o'clock, I lay on the couch. And if you lay on the couch like, you're sleeping, right? But if you learn to lay on the couch and put your hands up like this. People come through and they go, oh, he's meditating. But except when I snore, you guys kick me. Hey, that's my mantra.